Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So we welcome a brand new decade, Ruthie.
Yes.
It's Ruthie, Uni, Dad and me. No uni at the moment, obviously. And as it's a new decade...
Happy New Year. It's January 1st.
All that. We're recording this on January the 1st. That's how dedicated we are. As it's a new decade, if you look back and try and think what marks it out, I would say...
I know exactly what you're going to say.
Go on, then.
Dating apps.
It's the decade of dating.
And Don't question why I know exactly what it is.
And the reason, I'll tell you what it is. This is the second go. Very, very rarely do we do a retake, but we tried to...
When you've got magic, just... Straight away.
Yes. This is the second time we've done this. We were hoping to get you a brand new podcast out there for the new year, or at least for shortly after Christmas. But we had a technical problem, didn't we?
Had technical difficulties.
So we're doing it again and trying to be as funny as we were the first time. But you're quite right. What I said last time, and I still say, is what marks out the decade that we're just saying goodbye to is the fact that Tinder started in 2012.
Which I can't get over. Yeah. Like, it feels like it's been around so much longer.
Well, it does.
I guess it's because it's had such a monumental impact.
And when you look back at the 2010s, are we calling the decade the 2010s? I think we probably are.
Go for that.
Yeah. So if you look back at the 2010s...
I mean, we are calling it that.
There was all sorts of stuff happening in the 2010s, the referendum and all sorts of things like that. But dating, I've got three daughters.
Wait, I have... Sisters.
Yeah. I know you don't notice them because it's all about you. But the other two girls, both millennials, they're both going out with guys that they met on Tinder. And it's not a big deal.
Not Tinder, but...
Sorry? Was it Tinder or was it online dating?
One of them was Bumble and the other maybe was Tinder.
Yeah. So they've both met their boyfriends on online dating apps. And in my day, that was... We didn't have online dating, obviously, but...
Had equivalents.
It was like small ads in the newspapers and things. Mm. And that was considered an admission of defeat, really. If you met...
Yeah, it was like... I've seen it in films where it's like the lonely kind of
lonely hearts club. Yeah.
But it's not that at all. I mean, a lot of people use it, you know, if they travel a lot, just as a way of meeting up with people and stuff, which you would never have...
No, never
previously seen.
No, if you'd put in a small ad to meet people, it was one way of doing dating. But now it is the way. Is it a good thing, do you think? I think it probably might be positive.
I think it is and it isn't. Like, obviously, everyone wants to have the meet cute lives on, you know, in films. Have you heard of this?
The meet cute.
Meet cute. That's what they call it in, like, romantic comedies and stuff.
Oh, meet cute.
Meet cute. What did you think?
Well, I thought you said a meet cute. And I was thinking of perhaps during hard times in Russia, where people would queue up.
It would have been quite a jump for me to just start talking about sort of communist-era Russia.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were talking about, meet cute.
It would be weird, wouldn't it?
Meet. It would be weird. So, meet cute.
Meet cute.
Obviously.
Everyone wants a story where they can say, oh, we met on the first day of university. And
when Harry met Sally.
Yeah, when Harry met Sally. We met 10 years ago and then bumped into each other again. You know, everyone wants that and stuff. But...
That's out of date now.
I don't think it's out of date. Like, I think it's still what people would still want. And, I mean, it does happen for some people. But then I also think there's nothing wrong with kind of... Especially when you're a bit older, where it's not there's not so much of a, like, a hookup culture. But I guess it takes some of the mystery out of it.
And romance.
And romance, yeah. But then also, like... We say stuff is, like, less romantic, like...
Fewer. No,
we say stuff is like less romantic.
The whole thing about dating, it's moved on through the years. For instance, we went to see Little Women. Great new version.
I've been
to
see it twice.
You've seen it twice, absolutely.
I would go and see it again. I absolutely loved it. That was brilliant.
So it's a great new version of Little Women, Greta Gerwig's version, which we went to see. And if you look at dating then, which would be the late 19th century, American Civil War.
1868, I believe.
1868, American Civil War era. It was completely different, wasn't it? Mm. Because in those days, your family really sorted someone out.
It was an economic proposition, which is what she calls it, whatever. But I mean, there was still romance to some marriages, but I don't think it was as much. I guess that was also because of all the things that were tied to marriage. But yeah, it was kind of arranged, and you married within your social class, and there was all the etiquette around balls and stuff. But I just think that these things like change. Like, I was.
When you say the etiquette around balls, you obviously mean the dances and things.
Yeah. Yes. Not balls, like.
No.
No. Oh, Dad! I didn't even think that. I just meant a ballroom.
Yes, ballroom.
Oh. But then I was writing the other day, because I was writing some stuff about kind of all the etiquette around sort of messaging on Snapchat and who reads whose message first and popping up to people's stories and all that kind of stuff. And then I was thinking, it is just like all those, you know, when women used to use a fan to like signal different things. It's just basically the same thing.
What did they use the fan to signal?
There was a Horrible Histories episode.
Ah,
that's how I know this. And so they would, like, if they were holding it close to their body or, like, further away, it would gesture different things to a man to say, like, I'm interested in you or I'm not interested in you or whatever, which is essentially the same thing. I think, like, the way we do stuff changes, but all of the feelings are the same.
Yeah, I mean,
all of the romance is just different.
Absolutely, and I think this piece that I read said, you know, it was actually in favour of the online dating thing, saying it just sort of widens the pool of people that you can date, which has been happening over the years. In the 1890s, there was a great change because the bicycle was invented. And I thought, well, how a bicycle? What's that got to do with dating? And the point was that, you know, if you read Jane Austen and everything, people would, you know, women would get married to the local vicar. And once the bicycle was invented, they could cycle to another parish and get married to another vicar, a different vicar sort of thing. So that widened it, and then, you know, travel and all that sort of stuff.
I mean, people don't just stay in their hometowns now, which is one of the huge things that's changed dating.
Before we leave dating altogether, I think this could be true. The difference in online profiles and everything, the difference in dating between yourself, Gen Z, and your two sisters and your brother, all millennials.
I have a brother.
All millennials. It was a report by Tinder. It says, looking back over trends from Tinder users in the past year has revealed that Generation Z, those aged from 18 to 24 years, that's you, prefer their dates to have a passion for climate change rather than a thirst for adventure and exotic holidays. So basically, millennials would post pictures of the best beach in Thailand and all that sort of stuff, and that would attract other people to them. But it says Gen Z users are much more likely to mention a cause or a mission that they're passionate about on their profile than older generations. Millennials, those born between 1982 and 1995, were three times as likely to talk about travel rather than causes. So do you think you're more socially responsible?
I think probably the millennials. But, and then that's also like a thing of like, it's activism, and usually people who are younger are more interested in that anyway. And we've probably not been to as many exotic places or whatever. But I also do think that's a bit of a stretch to say that Gen Z daters are more interested in people who have a passion for climate change. I don't think it's massively true.
And while we're on the subject of dating, you have this thing at university at York Uni. Obviously, you're on your huge long break at the moment, but you're still checking.
It doesn't feel huge and long. It feels dwindling,
well,
scarily.
It's dwindling. You've got a few days left to do a bit of work. But you've still been looking at your crush, which is
mainly for this. I don't check it when I'm not there. I think that would. I don't want to be painted as some sad, lonely, scrolling through Facebook person. But yeah, I have got a your crush for you. So this is from the 22nd of December, because that was the latest update.
Yeah.
And it says, Casey, I know you're a BNOC, so I'm several social classes below you, but give me a chance this Christmas.
So tell me what a BNOC is. How do you spell BNOC?
You see, you could have looked really down with the kids and just said what it was.
Yeah, because I know we've done it before. Yeah, tell me what a BNOC is.
So it's BNOC. So it's an acronym. And it stands for Big Name on Campus.
We're talking about the report from Tinder. There's another report, which is from the Department of Education, which is probably slightly more credible source than Tinder. And this says the gap between the proportion of well-off and poorer children going to university has grown to its widest in more than 10 years, figures show. The headline of the story, Student Wealth Divide, is the biggest in over a decade. So what
is that saying that the richest students are much richer than the poorest ones, or that there's more rich students than poor students?
There's more rich students. Right, basically, okay. What it's saying is universities spend about £66 million a year on attempts to widen participation and attract students from more diverse backgrounds, but basically it's not working is what they're saying.
Right.
And I'm just wondering, at York University, does it seem to you that most people are from, you know, fairly comfortable
backgrounds? Yeah, I think so, and I would say so. And then also, there's still the people who are, I mean, there's lots of working class people who go to university, and I've seen that at uni, I think. But there's not...
At your uni?
Yeah, at uni. I think there are, like...
When we talked about... I know you met someone from Scunthorpe.
That was a comment on Scunthorpe, not on the university.
But I got the impression from that that most people seem to be more or less from your background.
Yeah. I think there's still very few people who are from backgrounds in which it would have been out of the realms of possibility that someone would go to university.
So if the Department of Education are saying, I'll read you what their conclusion was to this. A Department for Education spokesman said, institutions must continue to take steps to level the playing field for those from disadvantaged backgrounds and other underrepresented groups. Mm. We want access and participation to improve across all ages, not just young people. It seems to me, so they want more older people as well, and they've also somewhere in the report they've talked about people from other ethnic groups. The biggest increase in the proportion going to university was among black pupils, so that's gone up, but not from
low-income backgrounds.
Not from low-income backgrounds, and not from sort of older people of different ages.
I think the problem is that they're talking about changing like the institution, but I think it has to come much earlier than that. I think if someone gets to the age of 18 and they don't go to university, they've already made up their mind that they're not going to university when they were 12. Do you know what I mean? Like, you either grow up thinking I'll go to university usually, or at least I have the option there, or you grow up thinking I won't be going to university. Like, I think it has to start with better education.
Yeah.
And also better education and more equality in schools and stuff, like.
Or equality.
What did I say?
Equality. You were moving into the French. See, you're thinking
that,
in French.
Is that not an English word, though? Equality?
Equality, fraternity, and the other thing.
But I also think the problem is when you go into schools, is you're talking to everybody. They need to, if you're starting when you're 12 years old anyway, there needs to be specific targeting and specific help for those students in order to make it equal. Like, you can't just say, oh, we'll make this have equality.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you have university fees as well, it is some people.
Oh, yeah.
And it's perfectly valid to make the decision that money isn't going to help me. I should be an apprenticeship.
And that's the thing. Yeah, there's also a question of, like, maybe those people are just not going to university because they just don't want to, and like nothing would change that. So that's like kind of also fair enough. University is not the be all and end all. It's not for everyone, and that's fine. And if you're pushing people to go to university, make sure you're pushing them because they actually want to go, or because you think it will better them, not just because university is seen as this like societal ideal.
But the problem is, if everybody from university is from more or less the same background, you miss out on a certain amount of diversity. You miss out.
I think it's really important that they are pushing low-income backgrounds and like minority groups into universities. But also, I think we've reached a point where we, especially the college I went to, which was this quite like highly academic, where most people go to university and you're very much pushed into going to university. That's also wrong. Like, university isn't the best thing for everyone, and it shouldn't be sold, as it?
Do you have a bit of music?
Yeah, let's.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's start with yours. What have we got?
It's a song called Actress by Honeywire. Tonight, tonight, the star.
We're not just playing that because you've got a hangover and you wanted something chilled, because it's well chilled, that.
Yes, very chilled. It's like lo-fi.
Lo-fi, right. So So
it's just one guy. He's called Caleb Slack. He's American from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Yeah, been there.
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh, when?
It's not very exciting. When I was
it's got a great name of place.
It's a lovely place. It sounds romantic. Really fantastic, but it's not. It's like I was on a Greyhound bus going across America a long time ago and went to Albuquerque. It was sort of like a southwest route. And you think, oh, we're in Albuquerque, and it's just a Greyhound bus station and the same Walmarts and things that you find all over, you know, strip malls all over America. It's no more romantic than, you know, Spongecake, Idaho, or all these other places. It's just a place.
Yeah, he produced the majority of his music just in his bedroom and stuff. And then that is from his debut EP, Honeywire, it was called. And he's got a new one that came out in 2019 called Always In Sight. His newest album, he recorded all of it in Chicago.
Now, my piece this week, I've just said a late change, actually, in mine.
I didn't realise we were allowed to just pick a new song.
Yeah, I've picked a new one. So, have you heard of a lady called Dusty Springfield? I suspect you have. What have I done to deserve this? So how great is Dusty Springfield to start with?
Great.
Absolutely.
Voice of, not an angel, good voice.
Fantastic voice, fantastic voice, fantastic singer. And that was the song that sort of revived her career in the late 80s.
I didn't know she was alive then.
Yes, she was. She died in mid to late 90s. But her career just... She had all the hits in the 60s, which you know, some of the Preacher Man, all that stuff, little by little. The thing about Dusty, she was very big in the 60s with those songs, namely some of the Preacher Man mostly. But she was huge in the 1960s. And then she went through a very, very bad phase from about the mid-70s onwards until the Pet Shop Boys revived her career, and that was her with the Pet Shop Boys.
Mm.
But the song... This is interesting. The song was written by Ali Willis, who I told you about briefly, because her death was reported just at Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
She's a songwriter and wrote the song I'll Be There For You, the theme from Friends. Did you know it wasn't an actual song? She just wrote it as a TV theme. It was 45 seconds long. And then the Rembrandts, because it was so popular on the TV show Friends, they wrote a full-length version. So it became a song. She just wrote it as the theme for Friends. But she also wrote Boogie Wonderland for the Earth, Wind and Fire.
Yeah.
She wrote September for Earth, Wind and Fire as well.
Great
she wrote
song.
Songs for the
Everyone loves that song.
She wrote brilliant, brilliant songs. But reading her obituary. You know how I love the obituaries in the paper?
Getting inspiration for yours.
Well, yes, precisely. I usually just look at the obituaries to see if I'm in there. If I'm not, I know it's safe to carry on for the day. But she had a really interesting upbringing. She was born in Detroit, Michigan in 1947. So she was a teenager in Detroit in the 1960s.
Mm.
What else was going on in Detroit in the 1960s?
Riots.
Riots, 70s more, or late 60s. What was going on in
music.
The early to mid-60s in Detroit?
Motown.
Correct. And apparently she, I'll read you what it says. As a teenager growing up in Detroit, Ali Willis would sit on the lawn outside the Motown studio on West Grand Boulevard, listening in awe to the history being made inside by musicians such as Diana Ross and Marvin Gaye and Stevie Wonder, etc., etc. And she took her inspiration from that and wrote these songs for Earth, Wind and Fire, and that one for the Pet Shop Boys and Dusty Springfield and everything, and obviously they wrote so many fantastic things. She went initially to train in the University of Wisconsin in Madison as a journalist. And her dad wrote her a little note saying, stay away from black culture. He didn't want her...
My God!
He wasn't in favour of her Motown inspiration and all that sort of thing. And then she's quoted as saying, I got him back good, though, she said. When he passed away in 2002, I got the last word, because the very last thing I ever said to him, she says, I leant down and I whispered in his ear, I've just got the gig to write The Colour Purple. And she wrote the score for the musical of The Colour Purple. So,
wow.
Fantastic life.
Very talented.
Incredibly talented. She studied journalism.
Wow, this podcast is going to be... It's 20 minutes either end and then just 20 of you talking about Ali Willis.
It's a name
it is
that
interesting.
Will disappear. And I just thought that's something that you'll know... that some of your friends at university might not know. And, you know, when you're at a party sometimes...
I like that. You didn't just say friends, you said friends at university because you're staying on brand.
Correct. You'll say, it's written by Ali Willis. Yeah, the next time you're watching Friends on Netflix, which I've noticed you're doing with quite a few of your chums recently, you can say, Ali Willis wrote this.
You make it sound like I've got way more friends than I actually do.
I think you've got plenty of friends. But,
Ali Willis wrote this. Did you know it was just a 45-second jingle and the Rembrandts picked it up?
Precisely.
And all my friends will say, you're a massive nerd and I wasn't interested.
And I think it's interesting with young people now. If you actually know something, you're thought of as a nerd.
There was
sicker enthusiasm.
Back in my physics class in high school, there was a poster on the wall that had Simon Pegg, and he did a quote about being a nerd, and it was something like, I don't remember the whole thing, but it was like... being a nerd is just another word for saying that you're open about what you're passionate about rather than keeping it, rather than not saying anything. And that's not quite it, I'm paraphrasing, but it actually has really stuck with me and made me think, no, I actually am passionate about this and I will tell people. And that's not, it is nerdy, but that's...
good for you.
People,
be a nerd.
People also, like, if anyone would ever speak to me about something they're really passionate about, even if I'm not interested, I always am really... love to hear about it, like, because if someone else loves something, it's always nice.
Should we have a look at the emails?
What?
Not that many this week, but we have got a few. We're not going to win a Webby, I'm afraid. I'm not going to win it. Ruth, this email says... Just to you. I hope this finds you well! Exclamation point. And I'm saying exclamation point because it's from America. So it's not an exclamation mark.
To be honest, I thought they were just interchangeable. But
No, the same thing. We call them exclamation marks. The Americans call them exclamation points.
Didn't even realise that.
Yeah, well, there you go. It says, Ruth, I hope this finds you well. Our team contacted you earlier this season. After identifying Ruthie, me and my dad... the old title. After identifying Ruthie, me and my dad as a company making great digital work, I wanted to send a reminder that this week marks the Webby Awards final entry deadline. We encourage you to submit your best work by this Friday, December the 20th.
I think we've missed it.
We might have missed it. Webbyawards.com. However, I thought probably we wouldn't get a Webby even if we entered, because it says last year's Webby Awards earned $12 billion median media impressions from global media outlets, including the New York Times, Variety, the Washington Post, etc. And when we look at previous winners of the Webbies, they're people like Spotify and...
Airbnb.
Yes, people like Spotify, Airbnb. And I thought we weren't probably quite at that level yet.
No, maybe not.
Give it time. Chris Sunderland got in touch. Chris is a crony. He says, for context, I'm the oldest of old cronies. I've been listening to Martin since the Radio Hallam days.
Back in the early 1800s.
Yes, when I was in sixth form at school. I'm now in my...
That must make you feel...
Yes, it does. Oh, no. He says, I'm now in my late 50s. I've just listened to your podcast where you discussed Mario Kart and 24-hour libraries. That's a bit of an old one, that. As well as English accents in France. Ruth was asking what they sound like. That, do you remember you were saying,
yeah,
what do they think we sound
yeah,
like?
Yeah.
I thought you might enjoy a brief anecdote. Brief anecdote?
Yeah,
okay, here's his brief anecdote. When I had my first proper job, I was working for a large computer manufacturer, and my team leader was a French lady called Fabienne. I would occasionally try to converse with her in French. One day, she asked me where in the UK I was from. I told her, Doncaster. Then she asked, so why do you speak French with a Scottish accent? So they think you're Scottish, basically, with your Leeds accent, I suspect. I had a tweet from somebody asking where your sister Martha, who also has a Leeds accent.
I don't like you speaking about her.
Who also has a Leeds accent.
If you want to do the podcast with Martha, then go get Martha. Gosh.
No, she's too busy.
From second banana to Martha.
But yeah, somebody did send us a tweet. Asking, where is Martha? We've had a family argument. Where is Martha Kellner of Sky
that
TV?
Is, don't you think
where
that's actually
from?
Crazy that people would be arguing in another house about my
where
sister?
It is unbelievable. So I did tell them she's from the beautiful garden city of Leeds. They said, we're all wondering whether she's from Birmingham or Liverpool. And I don't think, I think Leeds is
they
very
said Sheffield
distinct.
As well. But yeah. She doesn't sound nearly as Leeds as I do.
Don't you think so?
No. Yeah. She does on certain words, like she said, like, no or something. The vowel.
Michael Cohen sends us an email as well. He says, Dear Martin and Ruth, thanks for some entertaining chats in the middle of the night. So he's obviously listening on talk radio. He's actually commenting on literally, you know, me being a bit of a grammar pedant. I don't like people saying, you were literally on fire, or it literally blew me away. Mm. He's directed me to... a message on the internet where somebody says, I literally had a heart attack.
Well, maybe they did. You don't know.
They literally did have a heart attack. He says, I think this supports the assertion that we should use literally in the correct way. So he doesn't see fewer and less.
Because I said, just to catch people up, you know, if you're just tuning in, I said that literally has changed colloquially and we shouldn't have a go at people for saying, I was literally on fire, or I was literally had a heart attack, because it's kind of become a way of just saying, like, whoa.
Yes, it has been a way of saying, whoa. But if you say, I literally had a heart attack, I think you do have to literally have had a heart attack. And one would suspect he would be in hospital and probably not writing to the podcast. So he literally had a heart attack.
Well, no, he didn't literally have a heart attack. It was someone...
The guy wouldn't be putting messages on...
No, maybe he had the heart attack. He was in remission or whatever. Got out and then just felt the need to update the YouTube comment.
Unlikely. Another of those reports that I've been reading is...
Gosh, you are all over these reports.
Well, I really, if ever I think that there's something that's going to be interesting to get your take on, I do a look at it. And whenever I see a headline which says teenagers this, teenagers that, I used to cut it straight out.
Oh, Dad, don't talk to me.
You're not going to be a teenager this year. This is a big thing. You're going to be 20.
Yeah, I had a friend to sleep.
20?
No, we were saying this, I had a friend to sleep last night and we were just talking about, like... the new year this morning, and we're saying, as if we're 20 this year, that means that this time in 10 years, just what's gone, is we're going to be 30.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing the way that works? 20
no,
and then in 10 years you're 30.
30.
Yeah.
I feel
I mean, apart from saying you feel old, but 20 is nothing, you realise that.
It's nothing, but it also, you know, eek. I feel like it's this decade, or like even this year has changed so... exponentially. Like, I started this decade at primary school and I'm going into, I'm at university now. Like, that's such a massive change. But then you think about it, and I saw someone tweet that was like, most of the people who were born between like 1999 and 2004 or whatever, this like Gen Z, within the next decade, you'll be getting married and having kids. And like that just is ridiculous. Like, a decade has gone really quick, I think.
Mm.
Although time speeds up as you get older, doesn't it?
Time does speed up as you
get older. Even this year, like, I look back on it and this time last year, I hadn't even sat my A levels and now I'm at university. Like, that's just, it feels like this year's been 2 years in one, really, or even three. Like, being at college, the summer, and university feels like just such different things.
Mm. Well, this report will still be relevant because it's not teenagers. It's the 15 to 24 age group. Yeah. And apparently there's this guy who's an analyst and a film producer. And the number of people 15 to 24 year olds going to cinemas gone down a heck of a lot. Cinemas are now being urged to provide more social spaces and put sofas in their foyers. So nice, comfortable sofas to address a 20% decline in young audiences. They could also publish the time a film really starts, so the actual start time, and finishes, to help teenagers plan nights out. And as I suggested, so
no, people are not going to the cinema because they're going on nights out. Like, that's just, what are they on about? Did someone like drop a bit of acid before they wrote this? Like, what do you mean? Like, you don't go to see a film before you go out, or like, you're not like, I'm going out tonight, I'll go and see this film, but what if it doesn't finish in time? Like, have they ever participated in a conversation? What?
Well,
sorry, I feel like I've got very angry about this very trivial thing, but just.
Well, it does seem a silly, odd to me, it? But they, you know, they've actually spoken to people to find out why they're not going to.
They must
cinema.
Have spoken to one really weird person.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, they claim to have spoken to a lot more than one real, you know, really weird person. What they're saying is that cinema-going habits are formed young, this guy said. If the current generation of young people disengages with cinema-going in a big way, then it's unlikely they'll attend cinemas in the decades to come. But I think there's more.
I'd be so sad if.
Which you started.
Oh, I love the cinema. The cinema's like, the Hyde Park Cinema in Leeds is probably, with the Yorkshire Sculpture Park, is probably my favourite place on earth. And like, we used to go every Saturday.
You
and
did.
I do think, like, I love going to the cinema.
Clifford the Big Red Dog.
The movie.
The movie. We saw like, Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Those are some of, like, I remember really vividly seeing Spirited Away because that was one of the first films I saw that was like, wow,
Japanese.
This film is brilliant. Well, it was probably the only Japanese film foreign film that I'd seen at the time.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, but then I just remember that, like, because I love films as well. Like, I'm probably more of a film
buff
than I am a music buff. Mm. And I think that, like, going to see stuff, and you also would take me to see stuff that I was probably too young to actually see, but I think that's, like, the best. Like, I just.
Yeah. So you're unusual, you see, among the 15 to 24 year olds, because cinema going. They need. I think 15 to 24 year olds, to get a passion for the cinema, need to be sort of taken at a fairly early age, I would have thought.
I'm also very lucky, like, that you did take me and stuff. You know, I know that not everyone is. Not everyone's dad would take them to the cinema. Not everyone would be able to afford it and stuff, but, like. Yeah, I'm lucky in that.
Well, I have to say, just to disillusion you, very cheap, the Saturday night at the Park. It was very.
What? All this time, I thought this was.
Cheap way of keeping you quiet, to be honest.
No, but you know, like.
We saw some great movies when you were little.
Really.
We saw some really
poor
awful ones.
Well, but
Clifford the Big Red Dog, for one.
That was one of the better ones, I think.
But we saw the Jim Carrey movie, Lemony Snicket.
Oh, A Series of Unfortunate Events. That was one of the other ones, along with Spirited Away, that would still say is like my favourite films.
Yeah, I mean, as a kid it was, but you look at it now, you probably.
Oh no, Lemony Snicket and Spirited Away, both films I would happily watch over and over again now.
Well, I think one of the problems with the cinema is going to be Netflix, because I've watched The Irishman and Marriage Story, both released on. I mean,
I've not seen The Irishman, but I never focus on a film the way I do when I'm in the cinema.
I think maybe people's homes are too comfortable because the golden
wooden
age,
seats, that's what you need.
Yeah, the golden age for cinema was sort of immediately post-war, and that's when people's homes weren't that comfortable. Yeah. You know, they didn't have all the comforts at home. People's
TVs are really good, and now you can have like a smart TV as well. You can have Netflix on your big screen. Like, we've just got that for Christmas, like Netflix and Amazon Prime on the TV, and it is very tempting to just watch stuff at home, but then, like, oh, I just love the ritual of going to the cinema. You know how some people love having a record more for the placement of the record, vinyl on the machine and stuff. I feel like that, but about going to the cinema.
Yeah. It's true, it's these little things. I mean, when I get...
I'd be really sad if they...
Well, they're declining. They're sort of casting round for different ways to stop the decline in attendance generally.
And if they make all cinemas couches like the Everyman, I hate that couch. It also feels like you're... It's a couple. It's made the cinema just for like romantic couples or whatever. And
I got the last seat at the Everyman in Baker Street, which is these sofas and things. And I had to sit on a sofa with this other guy, and he didn't know.
Weird.
Should we hold hands? Just put my arm around him. You know, it's just ridiculous. And he had some popcorn, and I was half expecting him to just offer me some popcorn. But of course, being London, he didn't. I mean, if he'd been up here, he probably would.
We've been told we're not allowed to... I looked through the Apple, iTunes reviews or whatever, comments, and one of them absolutely rinses us about saying that London's shit. that London's rubbish. And he's like, if you like Leeds so much, why don't you just stay there? Did I tell you about the... anti-Semitic thing. Did I say that on the...
Semitic?
Yeah, did I say that on the podcast?
I can't remember.
I'd written it down one week and then forgot to say it, and then I think I told you about it, but I can't remember what I did, but it's really funny, so I'll tell you again. STEM subjects are science, technology, engineering and maths.
Science, technology, engineering and maths, yeah.
So there's a lot of rivalry between people who do stuff like I do in history and English or whatever, and then the science people who think
there's more valid.
Yeah, you know, that's a real degree or whatever. And so there was a bunch of people who were saying, I have definitely said this on the podcast, because one of the boys who I live with had like listened or seen the title of it and was like, you've used my bit on your thing.
Oh, so we've used it, we can't use it.
But anyway, that's like not Mickey Mouse subjects, but humanities versus sciences.
Yes. Anti-Semitic is...
Yeah.
We remember it now from when you did it before. But it's nice to do it again.
I'll tell you what, we've done a lot of these and it's getting hard.
Yes, we have. You're absolutely right. Somebody did a survey about the subjects that people think, that students themselves think, are the least worthwhile subjects. And some of them, they always talk about Mickey Mouse degrees. Mm. But I suppose if you're doing...
We make fun of the girl who does drama. We make fun of that a lot. Yeah. She'll get back and we'll be like, how was the sandbox today? Or sandpit today? And the...
Yeah. Well, these are some subjects that students voted as the least important and valid subjects for a degree. You can do a degree in comedy, writing and performance. Can be taken at Salford University. And I would say that's could be...
But solely comedy writing?
It's solely comedy writing and performance. They call it here a stand-up comedy degree, which is not really, it's a bit wider than that.
Mm.
But I would thought that seems to be, to me, probably as valid as, say, one of those creative writing degrees they do at East Anglia University. It depends on how...
Yeah. I've heard overall about creative writing degrees, because I did kind of look into doing one a bit. I'm really glad I didn't. Yeah, I looked at... If I was going to apply for one, I'd want the East Anglia one. It's meant to be brilliant. Kazuo Ishiguro went there and stuff.
That's right.
Butchered his name. Anyway, but what I've heard overall is that they're kind of not great. It's not good to do it as a degree. I guess it forces you to be writing all the time. Do you know what I mean? Like, you have these massive hand-ins of, like, loads of writing. Like, that is...
And there's another degree that was high up the list of ones that students voted for as not worthwhile was Viking Studies.
Yeah, I'm with them.
Oh, you're with them. You're in there. Students deemed the study of medieval and modern Scandinavian languages, Old Norse literature, and medieval history to be the most pointless. But I would have thought.
No, in fairness, I don't think that sounds very pointless. No. I mean, well, you it's call it Viking
that
Studies.
Is nerdish,
yeah,
isn't it?
That's we there's that, yeah, archaeology. Is a big one we like make fun of.
Yeah, but as we applaud the nerd, we applaud
that doesn't sound
degrees.
When they call it Viking Studies, it sounds way more stupid than it is because it's kind of just like classics.
Yes,
or Roman studies, which you wouldn't be like, oh, weird.
No, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. You say I'm on board with the Viking studies. Hmm. Love the Vikings.
Yes, but if you talk about Viking studies, it sounds like
sort of it sounds ridiculous.
Well, it sounds like Game of Thrones, something like that.
Obviously, Game of Thrones, though, wasn't based on the Vikings.
No, it wasn't.
Based on the Wars of the Roses.
It was based on the Wars of the Roses, wasn't it? Mm. And you're a big fan.
Of the Wars of the Roses?
No, Game of Thrones.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah. I was going to
talk I've got some questions for you.
Of course you have. Tell me about these questions you
Well,
have
I don't like this building up to
well,
this.
Well, we did it on the other podcast.
Malarkey.
Yeah.
I've got three questions for you, Dad.
Okay.
What have you learnt this decade? I did 10 things I've learnt in the first term of uni. What have you learnt this decade, do you think?
This decade, I mean, obviously, I've sort of stopped learning stuff to a large extent.
Well, when you know it all.
Yeah, but it's reinforced me the view, and I think I might have said this to you before, that nothing matters very much, and most things don't matter at all.
Wow, we've gone full nihilistic then.
Yeah, well, it was a quote from a guy called Arthur Balfour, who was a British politician.
I know, Balfourites.
Yeah, and the Balfour Declaration, which created the State of Israel. So he was a sort of early 20th century British politician.
Did study him a bit.
Yeah, well, I used to work, well, this shows you how old I am. I worked with his, it might have been a great nephew, but it was somebody who was he was called Ewan Balfour and worked with me in the early 1970s when I was a newspaper reporter in Bristol. But I was always struck by
what was the quote again?
The quote is, nothing matters very much and most things don't matter at all. Now, he was saying it in relation to politics. It struck me as being particularly interesting in this year of Brexit.
Yeah.
This decade of Brexit and a couple of general elections.
Yeah.
Because I just thought the amount of hatred being spewed out by both sides, really, and the amount of we don't know whether it's true or not true. Are we heading to hell in a handbasket? We may be, we may not be. And it struck me that what was more damaging than anything that might happen as a result of Brexit, as a result of the Tories being in again, what was more damaging than any of that was the dialogue, especially on social media, which there's been more and more of.
I think when there's something like climate change, I think that puts into perspective how
I think climate change is obviously more important.
Yeah.
But I think if we took a bit of the hysteria out of it...
I disagree with the climate change. I think the hysteria is necessary. I think when... Have you seen the...
But do you think Greta Thunberg, maybe, when she is really strident, I mean, you know, I applaud her in many ways, but when she's really strident, says, how dare you? How dare you?
I disagree, I think the time for... I think the time for polite activism has passed. I think we're at the Greta Thunberg rage point.
Yeah.
Especially when you're my age. Oh, well, she's 16. She's slightly more impressive than I am, I'd say.
I think
it comes to climate change, I think she's dead on. I think, and I admire her ability. I couldn't do it, but she will be making people feel uncomfortable because they should feel uncomfortable.
Mm.
And she will sit there and say, I'm not going to make this easy for you. I'm not going to do the polite thing. I'm saying I'm absolutely
furious. Do you think
maybe
it would have been more effective to do the polite thing?
No.
In that the people who have to make the big changes stop going on holidays, because that's going to be a big change. Stop flying anywhere they fancy on holiday. Stop going on cruise ships. Stop driving their cars on short journeys. Those people tend to be people who might find the how dare you and all that.
But I also think that it's not her responsibility to not be off-putting.
No, I mean, she can do what she wants, but
You know, I understand, like, for the cause or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of people who do it like that, and it hasn't really worked. People haven't really changed their lifestyles in any considerable ways.
So what are your other questions for me?
What changes do you see between now and 2010?
Oh, right, what changes have I seen in the last decade?
Yeah, in the last
decade. Not what changes do I foresee in the coming decade?
What do you, when you look back?
Well, I would say it's almost entirely social media. Instagram followers, YouTube and all that, much, much more important. And so conventional media is being slowly whittled away, and it's now YouTube and Instagram and all that.
And then my final question for you is, what do you think the world will look like in 2030 versus what do you want it to look like? What are you hoping for?
Well, 2030, from my point of view, is very, that might be, you know, we're getting to the end game here, but 2030...
What do you hope it looks like for me?
What I hope it looks like for you is, I hope people will take on board the message that we want to be driving our cars less,
Yeah. We
want to be going on fewer holidays, flying, but I'm quite sort of sanguine about the...
Ooh, sanguine?
Yes, about the technological skills people will have to make the changes that are needed, and also so the fact, you know, socially these changes might be needed. And just today in this morning's paper, York, your very own city where you're at university, is poised to become the first city in Britain to ban private cars under the toughest measures yet to combat congestion and pollution, which I think is brilliant. All non-essential vehicle journeys into the medieval city centre would end within 3 years under a plan approved by the council. Obviously, public transport has to be made better. And again, this is me, I'm fully optimistic about this. And I think, you know, Boris will help.
Oh, I don't, I think don't speak his name.
He's a travel, you know, travel is
like
his thing.
Like Voldemort.
Travel is his thing.
Yeah.
And he did make the tubes better in London when he was mayor of, and the tubes in London are fantastic. Nobody with any sense at all would drive a car into the centre of London now. Mm. Hopefully that will happen. Somebody will have to grasp that net. Well, I think Boris is probably as good as anybody else for doing that. So I'm sort of fairly optimistic that people will change their ways. I might be wrong. Or that, you know, some technological...
So you think in 2030...
I think 2030
will not have burst into flames.
I'm saying 2030 will still be going.
Finally, Dad, I'll just tell you what my little meme is. But it's not a meme, it's a tweet that I saw, and I'm just going to read that because it was funny.
Mm.
Forgot that mum thing mums do, where they leave things on the stairs for you to take up with you. Just constant neat little piles. See a paracetamol pack, an off-brand phone charger, and an empty water bottle on a stair. And you know, a mum has been here.
Excellent. Excellent. Before we go, just we forgot to do, because so long since we've done one, apart from the one we did yesterday, which didn't work out. If you want to get in touch with us on email...
Yeah, we always do that at the end.
No, we sometimes do it after we've read the emails.
Yeah, sometimes we do.
So here we are. This is getting a bit meta now. We're discussing how we do it, etc. We're destroying the fourth wall. If you want to get in touch with us...
Brechtian of us.
Very Brechtian. Right, if you want to get in touch with us, we'd love to get your emails.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can. We'd love to get your emails.
It's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
That's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. And while you're online, you can also go over to Spotify, where the songs from this week will be there in full, and all the other songs from all the other weeks, so you can give that a listen.
Excellent. We'll see you again maybe next week or the week after.
Yes.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.